Reasons for Hope and Fear as we look at the world. Well, Judy, thank you for coming to hear this. When I came up with this topic, probably 6 weeks ago, I had no idea that there would be a convergence that would make the macrocosm of how we look at the world and how the world handles issues of hope and fear, conflict and resolution, and the micro of how we handle it as a loving faith community and as loving and often reasonable individuals. I had no idea that what would happen happened, and wish it hadn't. This is code that we'll all explain to you over coffee, and you'll get in 3 minutes. And one of the things that I learned over the last 42 years as a minister, and years before that when I was working as a nightclub performer, is that you have to talk about the elephant in the room. If there's an elephant sitting in the room and you're not talking about it, people are staring at the elephant and they can't hear you. And when you are an elephant, that goes double and triple. And I am, this without political symbolism, an elephant in this case. And we're going through a rough patch. And that happens. I'm sorry that we are in pain. One of the sayings in Africa is that when elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. I can assure you at this point in my life and career, I'm not interested in being an elephant. I'm not interested in power, and I'm certainly not interested in problems. We are here in this position, and one of the rules of theology and of therapy is that not even God can change the past. So the question for us all, as most of the time reasonable human beings who want nothing evil to cross this threshold, who want to find forgiveness and give forgiveness to each other, is not the sentimental question of why rough things or bad things or hurtful things happen in congregations. We talked about how church is like a family, and you mentioned how this is like a family. Well, I come from a family. Some of you do too. And occasionally families bump into each other, step on each other's toes, get into fights, get into arguments, yell, and for a time slam doors. And the feelings that we feel, the feelings of hurt, of disappointment, are absolutely real and appropriate. I have never had a sentimental view of church and family. I have believed the church is like family, and that we do have intimacy, and intimacy involves vulnerability and opening up ourselves to be hurt, to be judged, to step on each other's toes, to bump into each other occasionally with all the goodwill in the world and leave bruises. The question is not whether these things will happen. In an honest family and an honest community, they will happen. If no one is ever expressing any discontent, then someone is not expressing something real. Someone is either not saying something important or not being heard. That we sometimes say and do things that are hurtful is part of the inevitable price of intimacy. It's not fun, but it is the price of not wearing armor all of the time and of being human beings together, trying to find community and build community. And we cannot change the past, but we can, of course, change the future by what we do in the present, by our willingness to listen to each other with open hearts, to hear each other's pain and strife and try to understand, not judge who was right, who was wrong. That may be interesting, but where do we go from here when we are hurting? When people have made different decisions about the best way forward for this community. I should be clear that my concern here is not for the elephants, it's for the grass. And that's not a veiled Berkeley illusion. It is that the life and the green and the growth of this congregation is everybody here and not here. And whether any of the other elephants feel put upon or not great, I certainly understand. But we're not the most important part of this. The congregation is the most important part of this. When, and I'm now briefly going to segue into the original sermon, and I will come back to this, I haven't blown it off in three paragraphs. When I came up with this topic, the topic was about, I look at the world out there, and there are times when I just want to weep at our seeming inability to choose peace. I look at the former Yugoslavia, which lived under very difficult conditions for 40, 50 years. And when they had the opportunity to choose peace, they chose ethnic strife. I look at the tribal, and that's tribal warfare, by the way. Anyone that thinks tribal warfare is just African, it's not true. That's tribal warfare. When I look at the tribal warfare in Africa or the conflicts in the Middle East, sometimes between Sunni and Shia, sometimes ethnically between Arab and Persian or Turk, when I look at all of the excuses we use to keep ourselves apart from each other, it just is from time to time depressing. And I want to step back and say, no, we don't need to do these things. When we look at history, we see that strife that seemed so natural, so important in one moment, 10 years later became nothing. We don't know why they were doing that. We don't know why, when they could live in peace, they chose to live in war, and why, after living in war, they can live at peace again. And as Boris Pasternak said, when will they ever learn? When will they, when will we ever learn? Wars and conflicts and enmities can be real, but they end. And if they're going to end, why not today? I was shocked last week at Bob Dylan turning 70. Where have you gone, my blue-eyed son, my darling young one? And his line in one of those songs was, how many times must a cannonball fire before it's forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. But what does it take to pick up the smell of the wind? What does it take to be able to look at the world and look at the pain and at each other's pain and say, no, we don't have to do this. We're not condemned to follow footstep after footstep after footstep because at that first footstep, toes were stepped on. We can turn back from the precipice. It is not that bad things happen. It is, what do we do when we are hurting? What do we do to move ahead? Do we play games? I looked at American political system, and I have to tell you again, this is my day to share my depression with you. I look at the American political system, and it's upside down and backwards. Both parties, this isn't even partisan, but it gives you an understanding how we can get so tied up in our own perspectives and games that we miss the big picture. So that when the Republicans passed the Ryan budget that basically was going to get rid of Medicare as we understand it. Democrats were delighted. Republicans said, but we really want this budget. And so Harry Reid did a dirty trick, and he brought the budget up to the Senate. And the Republicans said, that's a dirty trick because we're going to lose. And Harry Reid played innocent and said, well, no, you just asked for the budget, and we brought it up to vote on. So how can you possibly fault us? So 2 weeks later, the Democrats asked for a clean bill on raising the debt ceiling, because if we don't raise the debt ceiling, it's a catastrophe. And so the Republicans said, okay, we'll give you a clean bill with no offsets. And the Democrats said, you can't do that. It will lose. It's a dirty trick to give us what we said we wanted. We get caught up and lose perspective in what's going on. And the truth is that none of those politicians on either side was thinking about us, was thinking about the American body politic. They were thinking about politics and winning and gotcha. It's a choice. Gotcha and playing the game is a choice. I have a degree in international relations, politics, economics, and military strategy. You might have noticed that that's not my career. I'll talk to your daughter. I did my dissertation on Sino-Soviet nuclear strategy. And you see how one thing leads to another that causes a predictable reaction, that causes a predictable escalation, that causes something else. And we say, why? How do we stop it? Because international relations is a full contact kind of thing. You stop it by not playing. You stop it by saying, God can't change the past, but we can change the present. I have never argued, as to my perfection. Were I to argue to my perfection and the flawlessness of my judgment, people could too easily adduce a wife who would speak otherwise, and three sons who are more than willing, able, and present to give testimony. I'm still polling pretty well with the seven grandchildren, and I hope to have them fooled for at least another couple of years. But the bottom line is, I don't know all the time that I'm right. I have to act in good faith, but it doesn't mean that I'm right. And passion and commitment is no guarantee that I or anyone else is right. There always needs to be some kind of humility, some kind of understanding that, in the words of that great philosophical essay, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run. And that's not a science. That's how we lead our lives. So that when we step on a toe, and I've never stepped on Danzig's before, and he's never stepped on anyone's before. All right, so I don't always tell the truth. Sometimes it's irony. So when it happens, when we bump into each other, when there is friction, we can't take it back, but we can move forward. We can listen to each other personally and in this congregation, and hear one another with modesty, with generosity, with openness of heart. We look out there in the world and wonder, why can't these people get, if wars are going to end, why not today? Why 2 weeks? Why 2 months? Why 2 years? How many must die before the war finally ends? We look at the macro out there, but it's just as important to look at the micro, to look at what our choices are every day when we are hurting, when we hurt, when we bump into each other, when we fall down? Can we keep open hearts? Can we keep open minds? Can we impute to others decent motives and motivations and find a way, a path to peace and a path to embrace? It is depressing and hugely inspiring to me when I see combatants from old wars meeting again on battlefields and falling into each other's arms. I know that friend can become adversary, can become enemy, can become friend, can become family. It's not an automatic process of history. It's a choice made by generous hearts. And I believe in our generous hearts.